This is Rainmaker FM, the digital marketing podcast network. It's built on the Rainmaker platform, which empowers you to build your own digital marketing and sales platform. Start your free 14-day trial at rainmakerplatform.com.
Welcome to Rough Draft, your daily dose of essential web writing advice. I am your host, Damien Farnworth, and the chief content writer for Copyblogger Media. And thank you for sharing the next few minutes of your life with me. Now, if you've been following me this week, you should know by now that we are on this monumental roll, breaking tradition, and instead of delivering a monologue, I pulled in some of the smartest brains on web writing for a little dialogue. Dialogue about overcoming obscurity and finding your voice and choosing the right words. See, there's a common myth web writers fall for, and it's this idea that proofreading online isn't nearly as important as writing for print. And if you believe that, you would be wrong. Proofreading is essential, which is why today, I am happy as a kitten to introduce you to Stephanie Flaxman, Copyblogger's editor-in-chief, who will help you choose the right words and teach you time-saving ways to improve your copy. And you're going to love Stephanie because she doesn't consider herself a defender of language. She considers herself a defender of the writer. That means she's full of neat tricks and deep wisdom about writing clear, concise, and compelling copy for the web, but from the proofreader's perspective. So, enough with the introduction, on to the show. State your name.
Stephanie Flaxman.
Okay, tell our listeners what you do.
I am Copyblogger Media's editor-in-chief, and I host the podcast Editor-in-Chief on Rainmaker FM.
Hi, Stephanie, editor-in-chief.
Hi, Damien. How are you?
I'm doing fine. So essentially what Stephanie does, what that means is that she edits and proofs what I write. She edits and proofs everything we write at Copyblogger. To be honest, Stephanie is the sort of person I need in my life. I mean, I did graduate from high school. I did get a college degree, but I still struggle with the difference between my who and my whom, and is it she and me or she and I? So I was thrilled when we hired Stephanie. So Stephanie, as an
introduction— I was thrilled too. We were on the same page.
I was very thrilled. I knew we needed you. So my question to you, my next question to you then is, what is the fascination for proofreading?
My personal fascination with it is I know how much work goes into writing. Writing is very difficult. We have an inside joke, writing is hard,
right.
Which I don't need to get into. But writing is so difficult, and I admire so many different types of writers. I really admire fiction writers because that is not my style at all. I have to kind of be autobiographical, and teaching and just nonfiction-y is just how I naturally write. And so there's so many different types of writers that I admire. But because the job is so hard, I really feel that, or writing is so difficult, that the role of the proofreader to help the writer out is really why I got interested in editing in general. The fascination is I can help someone with this very difficult job clarify their ideas and really polish what they originally produced so that the end product is something special. So I love that collaboration.
That's fine. So do you think that there is a greater need for proofreading online versus print?
Online, it's funny because there are so many things that are final on. Like, we think we can go back and change something, you know? in text online, and that is true. But the similarity to print is that that first version is probably sent out, if you're blogging, for example, mm-hmm. to your email list or through RSS. So you can go back and change a mistake on your site, but the people who subscribe probably got that first version if there is a mistake.
Do you think people are more forgiving online versus in print?
I think there is, because when you have a physical book in your hand, that's kind of like your world at that time. That's what you're focused on. Robert Bruce said this recently, like, in somewhere, I can't place it, but we're constantly clicking online. We just want to click, 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 and scroll. Like, we're in this kind of, we have this momentum built up. So I feel like it is more forgiving because there's so much to your world when you're reading something online. You have your email client open and you have all these other tabs open, and it's a lot faster. But a book is like a physical book with physical pages. Like, if that's all you're looking at that time, I think the focus is more on that. So people are forgiving, but it's kind of gray area there, because that doesn't give you an excuse to be sloppy.
Good point. So I want to dig into Stephanie, the proofreader, and see what you are made of.
Okay.
All right. So pretend you are in the supermarket and you ran down to the store because you needed to grab an avocado and mango for your salad, right? Mm-hmm. So then you show up to the cash register, and there it is, a sign that says 5 items or fewer. Does that drive you nuts?
That's such a very interesting rule, because fewer is supposed to be used when, in general, when you can count the number mm-hmm. of items, mm-hmm. when it's not just some infinite number. But there's also a lot of exceptions to that rule, because less sounds just how we naturally use the language and how it's sort of evolved. So 5 items or less sounds a little bit more correct. Or it just sounds...
So, but you don't feel like you have to get out your Sharpie.
You're saying, no, I don't. What I would... I can tell you something similar that does bother me. I'd have to get out and cross out the item and then get...
Because certain people have made sort of careers out of that, right? I mean, you know, like, they've started blogs. Well, we talked about this before, I think, that, like, your original blogging was... You were going to hunt down these mistakes, takes, you know, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was...
So in a previous life, you that would have just, like, given you nightmares.
I don't think it was authentic, and I think that's why it didn't work. At that time, I thought, oh, okay, well, this is a great way to create content. But it wasn't really something I was passionate about, and that's why it didn't stick, and that's why I had to find other types of content to produce. So I think that's a really good distinction. I was forcing myself to be really stern about things I didn't really care about that much. I was thinking of this article I wrote on my website, Revision Fairy, a few years ago now, but it was about how much I don't like when I would point out other people's errors. Mm. I'm so embarrassed. But I think really early on, I want to say like maybe 2009, I tweeted Brian Clark a typo. I'm so embarrassed. I can't believe I said that. But then I wrote this thing later. Like, I cringe when I used to point out people's errors, because you don't get copy editing work that way. You look like a know-it-all, and someone might be happy that they corrected the error, but they're not going to think, wow, this person is so great, I'm going to hire them to do copy editing for me. Like, that realization, if you need help with your writing, it has to come from you really feeling that from within, like your own, like, you know what, I really don't know these rules, I need to gather someone. But at the time, when you're just kind of searching for what works, a lot of people are like, oh, they're going to know I'm such a good proofreader. This was like in the early days of me figuring that I didn't get any work from pointing out someone's mistake. I mean, that's not how you get work. But I didn't, you know, I really didn't know any better. And It was a good lesson. But
So do you consider yourself a fierce defender of the language?
I consider myself a fierce defender of the writer. Going back to
this is why we like you so much.
Thank you. I'm really not a traditional language person or even traditional about the way that I think about copy editing. And I think that's why I gravitated towards marketing and not other ways that I could get involved with language and writing, because in marketing, there's a lot of creativity. And the bottom line is that you are communicating clearly so that the sale is a no-brainer, really, for in copywriting for the prospective buyer. And so yeah, and that really comes down to helping the writer get their intention out in the clearest way possible.
So there is not a wrong way to use language. There's not a right way or a wrong way to use language.
I'd say the wrong way to use language is if no one understands you. But that's very not technical, and that's not... That I mean, you know, that I'm not being specific about what that means, but when you're communicating something that no one is going to understand, but you have a really good point in there somewhere, use language, because you need to massage out your message so that it comes to the surface. And you have to be aware as a writer that you may not have done that the first time. And
so,
there has to be other...
So you are okay when someone breaks language rules as long as it's clear?
It depends on the situation.
Sure.
But yeah, if it's clear that, and it has a lot of substance and it's groundbreaking writing, the little language errors really don't, or I mean, little language, you know, things that might be off from traditional
experiments.
Ways of using language. Yeah, they don't. I think it really depends on the content and the substance. And talking about profanity in writing, that just kind of reminded me of, I kind of have the same rule there. If you're writing groundbreaking content, just completely cutting edge, nobody has talked about this before, and it's the substance is just so valuable for people and really interesting and entertaining and all those good adjectives that go along with good writing. You know, if you have profanity sprinkled in there, it's not going to hinder the writing. But where you can get into trouble, and even though I don't personally have any issues with profanity in writing, if your writing is subpar and you have profanity in there, you know, it's just going to make it look worse. The profanity doesn't add anything to it. So it really depends on the substance. And that, and going back to if someone, you know, experiments with traditional language rules, but the substance is there, that's what matters to me.
Okay. So would it be safe to say that you enjoy language?
I do. I enjoy words.
You enjoy words, yes.
Yeah, I enjoy language too. I like the craft of it. I like crafting words. I think it's really, it's very artistic to me to put different words, arrange different words next to each other, which I guess is language.
Yeah. I have this laminated checklist for my wife, right? When I started publishing stuff online years ago, she would... You know, she's been my personal sort of proofreader, editor. But there were like six things that I did that just drove her nuts. Like, you can't, you know, if you want to be taken seriously, you can't be doing that. So she gave me this laminated checklist of six items. She's like, before you hit publish, do me a favor, please check your work against this checklist. So, because most of us don't have, right, the luxury of a professional proofreader or editor.
Mm-hmm.
So what is the minimum editing or proofreading job that every online writer should do before they hit publish?
The most important thing is factoring time into your schedule to take a day away before you actually publish, when you finish writing, before you actually publish. That's the easiest in terms of, oh, you just have to set aside time. But it's the hardest because we don't always have that time.
Because we want to publish it right now.
Right away. Or you have to send something off because it's a deadline to,
right.
You know, another simple trick, and is also proofread or go through your text from the end to the beginning, because you've been reading it as you've been editing and writing from the beginning, beginning to the end over and over. So if you kind of doing what I call it kind of like a glossing over the text proofreading, mm-hmm. if you do that just one more time, it's maybe going to take 5 minutes, but you're not really getting a huge benefit from just your eyes glossing over the text again, because you've been doing it that way. But if you reverse the order and read from the end to the beginning, you can do it, you know, each word, you can do it each sentence, you could do it each paragraph, but your brain is tricked into you haven't seen those words
in that order.
In that order, and the punctuation in that order. Right. And
oh, that's a wonderful little trick. I like that.
Thank you.
Okay, so let's close with this. All right, here at Copyblogger, we use the Oxford comma. Would you say you are pro or anti Oxford comma?
I am pro. I look at punctuation as art.
To art, me, it that's guides. Nice.
I look at everything as art. To me, it's art that guides the reader along smoothly.
Yeah. Okay. Would you die on that hill?
I don't think I'd die for punctuation.
So I yeah I right. Good for you. I don't have to worry about that when I see you in Denver, right?
No.
Okay. Great. All right. Well, hey, thank you so much. Why don't you tell people where they can find you?
You can find me. You can find all episodes of my podcast where I talk about more proofreading and editing tips like I talked about right now at editorinchief.fm. I am on Twitter. My handle is just my name, Stephanie Flaxman. And it's Stephanie with an F.
Be warned, people. She will, if you tweet her, she will only reply with one word. All right, Stephanie, thank you so much.
Appreciate it.
Okay, take care.
You too. Bye.
And thank you for listening to Rough Draft. I value your time. I value your support. I value your attention. I don't take none of that for granted. And by the way, for all of those out there who've taken the time to listen to the show, to share the show on social media, to leave a rating or review on iTunes, thank you, thank you, thank you. I'm talking about people like Bonnie David and Darren Metis and Jesse Wisniewski, Existential Ella, Boomtown McWashington, and Bob the Green Guy. Your support means so much to me, and I love hearing from you. Brutal and all. So if you haven't left a rating or review, jump over to iTunes today. So tomorrow we wrap up this special week of interviews. We wrap it up with a short interview with Belle Beth Cooper. The Belle Beth Cooper of Buffer App fame is going to share her secrets about rapidly expanding an audience through content syndication. It's such an appropriate way to end the week. So until then, take care.